Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good midnight, whenever you're listening to us. You're very welcome here. This is Lizzie and Justin from Turning Towards Life and Third Space. And we are here again turning towards another wonderful source, this time brought by Justin. And also, Justin, one that I've had in my realms for like decades, I think, this one. And so I'm really excited to feel into this with you and walk as we do into whatever the territory is. And what I know about Turning Towards Life, though, Justin, is we could probably do the same source a number of times and find all kinds of different things about it, because of the nature of us being here is different to me reading it on my own or discussing it with someone else or whatever. So I'm noticing the beauty of the practice of being particularly here with you and in Turning Towards Life and with all the people that are here, that brings a particularly unique something forth each time. And we also know that if this was in other people's hands, in another pair of humans' hands, it would be a whole other reflection too. So I am feeling kind of awe, I guess, at the potency of each of our sources and appreciating every human who's written them and done the reflection to be able to produce something and then been generous enough to put it in the world, that they're so potent they could bring all kinds of different reflections out of people. It's not like the thing makes the same reflections happen in all the humans. It happens differently for each of us and then happens differently depending on who's there in combination. So I'm feeling very amazed in this moment by how we make what happens by being ourselves and being in the conversation together. It's really wonderful. So thank you for bringing this, Justin, and thank you everybody for being here. You're very welcome.
Thank you, Lizine. Thank you, everyone, and welcome. Yes, well, this source has also been on my list for years, Lizzie. We're 437 weeks into Turning Towards Life and it hadn't appeared yet, so I thought it was time. And before I say anything else, I just want to say we are recording this on the 22nd of February 2026. At the beginning of March, on the 4th of March, we're beginning our second season of Turning Towards Life Live, which is a way that you can come and join with us and other people who want to learn and be open and be in conversation with one another. We meet once a month and we do this: take a source, learn from it together, learn from one another together, talk together, make community. Once a month over 6 months, it's on a Wednesday evening UK time, and applications are still open. And if you go to turningtowards.life, there's a very clear link just below the photo, Lizzie, of you and me, where you can do lots of things, including support us and contact us, find out about the coaching programs we run, but also join that. And I want to make a very warm invitation. You'd be so welcome, any of you, even if you've never spoken to us in person yet. In fact, maybe particularly if you've never come and done something with us live in real time, you'd be so welcome. And Lizzie, what you say about this source, I think it's important to say, which is there's one view about writing is that writing means just one thing, or it means what the author meant when the author wrote it. But we know that that's not true of anything in human life, really. As I speak to you now, I might have some sense of what I mean. And then you're making a new kind of meaning from it as you receive what I have to say, and that then shapes what you'll say. And it's the same with Portia Nelson's words that we're going to read in a moment, that they mean something specific to you and me in this moment, and also in between us in this moment. And then, of course, the other thing we know is that we'll talk with one another about it, and everyone who's listening will be making their own sense of it, which will be unique for that person and at this time, the day on which we listen or the day on which we speak. And I think it's a really important principle for learning from one another and learning from writing and learning from life. And also, for another whole conversation, another time, you and I practice and teach coaching, integral development coaching, and there are some approaches to coaching which try and take that out of the picture by having a coach be someone who doesn't really have anything to say for themselves. They can reflect back, maybe something like that, like be a mirror, be an excellent mirror to their client. But what it steals, if you only do that, is the possibility that the unique kind of meaning that's arising in the mind and heart and body of the person who's a coach in this moment from their whole of the background of their life has such a contribution to make in exactly the way that you and I are talking. And it seems to me that often coaching is this kind of conversation that you and I are having, Lizzie, where you say things that make sense in your own life. And then I, if I'm a coach, I'm making sense of what you say and of my own life and of what's in between us and saying that back. And then you're doing the same. It's exactly the same process as intention here. And it's very alive and living and exciting to do. And I know that's why 437 weeks in, I'm still here with you doing this, is because it's never stopped being alive. And I do have this little funny thought experiment that we should take all of the sources that we've done before and then just do them all again, which would take us another 8 years because we've had very few repetitions, because they would all be so different next time around. We've done it a few times. I'm sure this would be the same. So this is Autobiography in Five Chapters by Portia Nelson. Like all of the sources, I was thinking, Lizzie, the other day that I'm going to start saying, and I'll say it now to everyone, you might want to have the words in front of you. You might find benefit in seeing these words or seeing them afterwards and then reading them. So we always make them available. They're always in the podcast show notes. So if you're using a podcast app or Spotify, you can find them. They're always on our YouTube channel and also on our website. So turningtowards.life has all 437 sources. And sometimes it's good just to sit and read and make your own sense of the written word, not just what we're saying. And this poem is a case in point because it's laid out in a very particular way that invites a kind of sense making from Portia Nelson. And it goes like this. It's Autobiography in Five Chapters, Chapter One. I walk down the street. There is a deep hole in the sidewalk. I fall in. I'm lost. I am helpless. It isn't my fault. It takes me forever to find a way out. Two. I walk down the same street. There is a deep hole in the sidewalk. I pretend I don't see it. I fall in again. I can't believe I am in the same place, but it isn't my fault. It still takes a long time to get out. Three. I walk down the same street. There is a deep hole in the sidewalk. I see it is there. I still fall in. It's a habit. My eyes are open. I know where I am. It is my fault. I get out immediately. Four. I walk down the same street. There is a deep hole in the sidewalk. I walk around it. Five. I walk down another street.
Thanks, Justin. Autobiography in Five Chapters by Portia Nelson. One. I walk down the street. There's a deep hole in the sidewalk. I fall in. I am lost. I'm helpless. It isn't my fault. It takes me forever to find a way out. Two. I walk down the same street. There's a deep hole in the sidewalk. I pretend I don't see it. I fall in again. I can't believe I'm in the same place, but it isn't my fault. It takes a long time to get out. Three. I walk down the same street. There's a deep hole in the sidewalk. I see it's there. I still fall in. It's a habit. My eyes are open. I know where I am. It's my fault. I get out immediately. Four. I walk down the same street. There is a deep hole in the sidewalk. I walk around it. Five. I walk down another street.
This one makes me smile every time. And I'm so actually very glad to have Portia's words inviting a kind of levity, like a kind of lightness around something that's actually, many examples I can think of in my life that fit Portia's description are painful, embarrassing, regretful, you know, full of lots of emotions that I think I would rather avoid the shame part, particularly, like all the mistakes, Lizzie, I've made, and then kept on making, and then kept on making, and then blamed other people for them. Maybe we'll get into some examples as we go, but it's actually a relief to have someone say, you know what, there's kind of something to laugh at a bit here. Like, how crazy it is being a human, in a way, that we do this, and I really think we do. Most of mine, the ones that come to mind for me immediately, are mistakes in relationship. You know, places where at best I was clumsy, at work I was incredibly unskillful, hurt someone, hurt myself, got myself in a situation that I really didn't want to be in, the other person didn't want to be in, let people down, let myself down. I mean, there are loads of those, but they often are in the, they're not actually relationships with holes, like static things like holes in the street. They're mostly for me in the realm of this confusing world of relating to other people and how many misunderstandings there can be between us. And the line that has the most emotional weight for me, where in all of the sort of joy of, oh yeah, isn't it sort of funny, us humans, how we do this? The line where I can feel a kind of clunk is towards the end of chapter 3, it is my fault. So it's seeming to me that one of the big mistakes I've made in my life again and again and again is to say, I have nothing to do with this mess I'm in. I have not, it's not mine, it's everyone else's, which usually means, by the way, I think it's everything to do with me. But my own self-criticism is so sharp and so harsh and so shaming. My defense strategy against the weight of my own inner critic is to go, nothing to do with me, it's all to do with the other person. And then to sort of puff myself up, getting self-righteous, how excellent I am and what mistake they've made. And the key for me here, there's lots in Portia's poem about learning to observe, watching over time, paying attention, noticing the connection between things, experimenting with new practice. And there's lots I could say about that. Maybe I will. But the turning point for me always in these tends to be mostly tends to be allowing myself to feel the very tender, very shaky, very painful feeling of, oh, I actually do have something to do with this situation. It may not be entirely my fault, like I'm the only one who's responsible for a difficulty, usually not, but I always have a part. And I guess I always, nearly always have a significant part. And until I get to part 3, I don't really think anything can happen. I think part of my falling in the deep hole in the sidewalk, I pretend I don't see it, which I've done enough times, is actually because it's been very hard to feel the feelings that come with being wrong or being incomplete or not being smart enough or not being competent enough or something to find my way through something. So that one really has helped me. Just to be able to go, okay, if it's my fault, now what?
So the line that was clunky for you, as in it clunked in, was the it's my fault one in chapter 3. The one that made me both feel that clunk and also feel amused is the I pretend I don't see it line, which you also mentioned. And I feel really, you know, when something gets said and you kind of snigger to yourself and know that it's true and hopefully nobody sees it kind of thing. I feel like that about the I pretend I don't see it line. And I think I'm the same, Justin. It's funny because I don't know what is outside of relationship really in this moment in terms of the mistakes I make. Maybe I make mistakes with myself, but still I'm in a relationship with myself. But I'm feeling I know now, like on the approach, you know, when you're going, ah, yes, here we are again. This is going to happen. There are definitely choice points. But there's also a very strong thing in me of just pretending it's not that. So I can see what I'm doing. And as you said, this is like an invitation to, and also a declaration of our capacity as human beings to be reflective and to observe and to do things differently as we go along and we learn. And so I think the whole pretending bit is very kind in this poem because it turns it into a stage. It's like, oh yeah, that's what everyone does. It's okay that you do that. It's okay you've done that 100,000 times. And maybe we do number two 100,000 times or something. But we can see it again and again, and some things take a long time to be able to really see clearly. And also this thing that you said about how can we be kind enough to ourselves that we can tolerate and take different action from being wrong or having taken a misstep or done something silly when we didn't mean it or we did mean it. It's like, if we could be kind to ourselves, it would be so much easier just to walk down the other street. But the other thing that's really here with me, Justin, is how this process is so not kind of in isolation for each of us, in that I might want to walk down another street, but you might want me to stay right in the dynamic with you because we're in it together. So every time I say I want to go down another street, you're like, no, you're coming back into the black hole with me. Thank you very much. And it's hard for me to say, no, I'm going down another street and then take the other street, because there's a lot invested between us in us doing the same thing we've always done. You know, this word habit is used in number three as well. And there are these relational habit patterns that until I'm sick of them, they just will keep happening. So the here we are again is really common. And then at some point, I know myself to have just been like, I can't do this again. I'm not doing it again. I can't do it again. This is ridiculous. And often what happens with me in these kind of relational spaces is I can't even remember what we were arguing about. I just can't. And so the more that happens, the more I realize that it's not about the content. It's not about who's right and wrong. La, la, la. It's a dance that we don't have to do or we do, or we do, but we can choose not to do it because it's not really materially. I mean, of course, some arguments, discussions, processing is really crucial, but a lot of the time, you know, we talk about the dishwasher a lot. It's about things like the dishwasher. It just doesn't add up to anything substantial in terms of the outcome of us talking about it for a long time or whatever. And so I'm feeling the habitualness of it, the difficulty in letting things go, letting patterns go and changing a habit, and the kind of kindness that's needed towards ourselves to not keep playing the part that we've been playing. Because in the admission of, or the acceptance of responsibility and being accountable for, as you say, what my part is, in that moment, something new gets to be born. In that, like that, and that's the gift of it. And as I'm saying it now, I'm feeling it really appreciatively, which is that the minute I say, okay, well, what's mine here? What could I do differently? What did I come at this with in terms of my background judgment or my attitude or motivation underneath? What did I come at this with that I could take responsibility for and I can look at? And then in that moment, my power changes. Instead of being beneath some bigger power that has me, in the moment of me taking responsibility and seeing and being kind enough to myself to be able to do that, being gentle with myself, say, yeah, you did that. It's okay. And let's look. Then something new is possible. So I'm realizing that without kindness, taking responsibility is very impossible. And walking down a street is completely impossible because I haven't taken the responsibility.
I'm thinking now, Lizzie, that our second season of Turning Towards Life that we're about to start is about healthy power. And that this, I've never thought about this poem before in this regard, but I am now because we're heading towards that. Something that you just said, which is, there are, of course, those dynamics that any of us can face and that many people face, where we actually have very little power to change our circumstance. We might be properly constrained in some way by the way that somebody else is powerful or some other people are powerful. But in many, many situations, we have much more power than we know. And one of the kinds of powers that we have is the power to address the way that we make sense of and come at the situation that we're in. That's a power that's always available to us. It's one of the things that Viktor Frankl writes about so meaningfully in his book, Man's Search for Meaning, about the one power, the one power that can never be taken from us is the power to make sense, the way that we make sense. And I was thinking about how the first parts of this poem, probably up until the line, it is my fault, are really describing that place where we make ourselves too small for the life that we're in. There's all these things happening. There's a hole in the sidewalk. Oh, falling it again. Somebody, who dared put that hole in the sidewalk? It's nothing to do with me. And I think the truth is that as long as we say it's nothing to do with me and I have no room to move here, it's not mine, it's not my fault, we render ourselves essentially powerless in the situation. We make ourselves way too small. And in lots of relational circumstances, lots of ordinary everyday, with a partner or a sibling or a colleague or a boss or a, you know, whatever it is, where we say, yeah, this thing that keeps on happening, I have no part to play in it, we can then stay in this it's not my fault kind of story that might also be filled with resignation and frustration and resentment. And so there is a move to make to go, if I were to breathe myself a bit bigger here and say part of this is mine, even if it's only the part that's inside me, which it rarely is only that. And you said this earlier about choice. Being a human is about having choices. And this poem is about waking us up to something other than our automatic pattern. So this is a poem about noticing our automaticity, paying attention to it, and recognizing that there's a creativity available in any moment that may not stop us falling in the hole, but may change how we fall in or what we do when we're in. So there's something about right-sizing here ourselves for life. And I was also thinking, Lizzie, from what you said before, there's another whole reading of this poem where we could just replace I with we, which would be so illuminating for all those times where, you know, I think one of the most mysterious and difficult areas of my life has been in relationships which I care about, where we find ourselves some way down into what seemed to make sense for me at one point. It's probably usually a disagreement or an argument or something. I have no idea how we got here. I have no idea what we're talking about anymore. I have no idea how we ended up in this particular kind of energetic exchange that might involve blame and recrimination and self-loathing. How on earth did we get there and here, and what is this about? Often I don't know. Maybe the other person doesn't know either. And so it's so useful to be able to say, can we right-size ourselves here for the situation? Can we track back and say, oh, you know what? I think we fell in the hole when you told me that I was a good-for-nothing messy dishwasher loader or whatever it was. I think at that point, something happened in our conversation. If I just track back a little bit before, I was already feeling angry and frustrated at not being seen. And so I was behaving towards you in a kind of passive-aggressive way. And, you know, we can sort of track back. We can find, if we look, we can often find the moment where we ended up in the hole. And the most important thing might be able to say to another, oh, we're in a hole again. Not carrying on doing the thing you do when you're in the hole, is to look at one another and say, okay, we've fallen in the hole. I can't believe we're here. Might take us a while to get out. How do we get out of this? That's that move of observation together, of not just being in the experience, but observing the experience together. Well, you and I know we've done this many times ourselves, you and me, and then with other people. It's such a kind and liberating move to not just thrash about in the hole or try to scramble up the walls or try to get away from the other person in the hole. We there's a deep hole in the sidewalk, we pretend we don't see it, we fall in again, we can't believe we're in the same place. It isn't our fault. I think that would be a great reading of this poem.
Mm. I love that. And I'm just taken by what a hole is at the moment and how unproductive a hole is, if you know what I mean. Like, as in, the sidewalk is helping us go from our house to the park or to the shop. There's a purposefulness about the sidewalk and its directionality and why we're there and all that kind of thing. And then, you know, I know this feeling so well, Justin, of like, I don't know what we're talking about anymore. I don't even know who I am, who you are, what on earth brought us here. I don't even understand what you're saying or I'm saying. So I was just feeling the nature of a hole and how kind of roundy it is and how there isn't, you know, there's no way out other than upwards or something in this context, and how hilarious it is that that's even possible, that we get so far into something that we then don't know what it's for anymore and we've lost our way. And maybe that is how we know we're in a hole, because we really don't know what's happening anymore and we're lost or something. And how amazing that we can get there. I've certainly got there 100 million times in my life and forget what on earth, like, what's this for? Like, what's the outcome of this? Like, there isn't one. So should we just stop now? But for us to both know when that's happening and that it's going to happen seems very helpful. Because you can spend a long time in a hole. I can. Like, holes don't throw you out of themselves. The hole doesn't disappear and then bring you back up or something. It's us who has to get out of them. It's us who has to do something or see something or find out something or be in so much pain that we don't want to be in there anymore, that we do something different. So of course those holes are gifts in that they bring us to the point of wanting something different. They bring us to the point of going, I don't understand, or I can't do this anymore. This is too painful. It's too dark in here, or whatever. And being one who can say, well, this is a choice as to whether I'm in the hole or not, is like a whole different life. It's a whole different life to feel like I have agency about the whole, and that I can say, I see it. I've learned enough now to know what that hole is. I can feel its pull. I can feel the attraction of it. I can feel all the things. And like you said at the beginning, there's this practice of maybe I don't have to do that this time. Maybe I'm just not going to, take the bait. I'm not going to hook myself on. I'm just not going to do it. And then find a way to, I think the important thing for me, Justin, is also, as I always am banging on about, is about community here and finding people with whom I can be in a conversation with about this. What are my holes? What are the places I fall into? And how do I keep building my awareness by being in conversations like this, where we're kind of entering into new awarenesses all the time, and find my way so that I don't have to keep doing it again and again? And that also might take some time, you know, to keep talking and finding how come I keep going down that hole and what's actually happening. But that extraordinary capacity that every human being has to reflect on what has happened and what's going on leads us to the kind of power that we need and do have in order to choose differently.
Yeah, it's very good to have people with whom we can talk about the holes we fall into and not just be ones who fall into the hole again and again. It's really helpful. I was thinking, Lizzie, I had this new thought from hearing you speak that I had never thought before, which is when we're walking the sidewalk, and you said a sidewalk, a pavement, it takes us somewhere, it's purposeful. And there is a something for the sake of which I'm walking the sidewalk, a reason or a purpose or an intention by which I'm walking. When I fall in a hole, and I think very often this is the case when I fall in a hole in a sort of an argument with someone else, I lose track of the original intention. And mm-hmm. what it's placed by is this language of taking the hook. I think there's a book by Pema Chodron called Don't Bite the Hook. And I was thinking about this is that it's so easy to bite the hook of a different kind of purpose. So we were talking about, you know, whatever it is, how we raise our children. But now we've fallen in the hole. And now I've forgotten that that's what we're talking about. And the hook that I've taken is something like protecting myself or making sure that I don't feel wrong or not feeling ashamed or dealing with the panic I'm in or whatever it is, that we lose sight of that for the sake of which we were originally walking the sidewalk together. And we take on whole purposes, you know, which might be panickier. And that's just such a useful insight, I think, for me, is to see, to be able to observe, oh, what am I now trying to do here? Do I even know what I'm trying to do? Which is a little bit like, what's the conversation we're in? But what am I trying to do? If I'm honest about it, when I'm in a hole, it's usually wholly other than the thing that we originally set out to do. And that's the clue that I'm in a hole.
Mm.
That tells me, okay, now is the time to stop. And go, Lizzie, we're in a hole together.
Yeah.
Do you think we're in a hole? Can we just...
Yeah.
What are we trying to do here? And so often I found that returning us to the for the sake of which, that for the sake of which we are, when we remind ourselves of why we are in relationship or friendship or this particular conversation, it's part of getting ourselves out of the hole, because the nature of the hole is that we end up taking up other purposes. And that's what's going on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a real wonder that we can ask different questions than we're used to asking, and they can really help us. I'm feeling really hopeful, and like we can never see the full picture. So however painful it is and however hard it is, there is always another way. It just feels like there isn't. And God knows, I felt like there isn't another way so many times. Like, you know, when you're so in a pattern in a family or a marriage or parenting or whatever, you're like, there must be another way, but it's impossible to see. And I think, like you were saying at the beginning, this is the miracle of relationship and other people that aren't us having extraordinary powers just because they are not us, not because they're holding some position or something. But to actually say, this is what I can see, and you could try this. And this would be different than what you would normally do. And we could see if we practiced this, if we thought this way, if we reflected this way, it could break the cycle in some way to open a shard of light that we could crawl through and see what that was like instead. It's so hard to see ourselves without someone to reflect alongside.
You know, the miracle that we humans can be for one another by not being one another.
Yes.
Which goes back exactly to what you said at the beginning, Lizzie, which is exactly that the way that, who knows what Portia Nelson meant in the act of writing this poem, we can guess. But what this is for you today, and what this is for me today, which are different, and then the to and fro between us, is so necessary for living well. All the ways in which being with you shows me that which my way of seeing and my habits make it hard for me to see.
Mm-hmm.
And all the ways that what I say lands in you and hearing you then talk back, it's all part of this process of we've talked about this many times, cultivating a many-chambered heart. So thank you Lizzie, for being a person who's so dedicated to that, to the work of cultivating many chambers rather than being fixed on just one way of seeing, and then of helping me and so many other people do that. It's a great blessing and very joyful to be in this conversation with you in this way. Thank you, all of you who are with us, those of you who listened, you're still here at the end of our half an hour together. Thank you for staying here to the end. we'd love to welcome you on to Turning Towards Life Live. It's still open for another 10 days or so. You can and you can email us if you've got any questions about it. Be wonderful to meet you and be with you just for a few hours every month, and you'll get to meet some wonderful other people. And also, head over to wearethirdspace.org and you can find out about our coaching programs, because our year-long professional coaching course starts in the summer and people are applying, and that's very exciting too. And you can email us hello@turningtowards.life. We'd love to hear from you. And we are going to bring today's conversation to a close, and we will be back, all being well, next week.
Thank you, everyone.